Welcome to this episode of the Soul Frequency Show. I'm Shauna Lee, modern day woman living a mystical life. Can you believe that we're almost a third of the year through 2018? I mean, does it feel like time is speeding up? I know it does for me. And literally, there's actually evidence that truly time is speeding up, meaning we can process information faster, manifest faster. And of course, it just feels like the hours on the clock are going faster and faster. And so with all of this faster talk, in this episode, we're actually going to be slowing it down a little bit. And we're going to talk about empowerment. And more importantly, how you build self-empowerment, what goes into that, and how your life experiences affect the level of self-empowerment that you may be experiencing on a day-to-day basis. This week, award-winning nutritional therapist, bioenergetics, and psychology practitioner Nikki Gratrix joins me on the show. Nikki helps people to optimize energy and overcome emotional stress and trauma. And she has so many nuggets of wisdom to share about the roots of self-empowerment. So on today's episode, Nikki shares about the imprints from childhood, about cultural beliefs around empowerment, and how we can awaken from both subtle and overt suppression to find greater freedom in our lives. With no further ado, the extremely insightful Nikki Gratrix. Hey, Nikki, I'm so happy to have you on the show today.
Thank you, Shauna, for having me. I'm honored to be a guest.
Yeah, and I love the topic that we're talking about, how childhood trauma can affect empowerment, because I think that oftentimes this is not where our head goes when we think that we might be feeling not empowered or want more self-empowerment in our life. And I love the work that you do. So can you share a little bit about your journey and, you know, what brought you to today?
Yeah, sure. So my background was actually, I've spent the last 15 years now actually working with people who were stressed, burnt out, and are at the extreme end for many years of chronic fatigue syndrome. So I've worked with that whole spectrum of sort of people who are housebound, bedbound, through to people who actually just want like supercharged energy. So, but my specialist area is really like the impact of stress and how that affects our psychology, well-being, what we're manifesting and achieving in our lives, and also how stress, you know, kind of impacts the physical body as well, because obviously that was my background in the sort of area of what we call psychoneuroimmunology, which is the area of science that studies the impact of psychology on biology. So, and I've sort of co-founded a clinic in London where I specialised for 5 years working with the severe cases of chronic fatigue. And we got a paper published in the British Medical Journal on our results with clients. And we were using like nutritional kind of functional medicine, you know, healthy lifestyle protocols, as well as psychology. And, you know, psychology is just so important for everything. It's not just health, but, you know, we tend to just think about psychology in its own compartment, you know, for sort of, you know, in our, for spirituality, for health, for well-being, but we don't always go into the depth that we need to in that area purely on the health side. So yeah, that's a little bit about my background.
Yeah, it's really, really fantastic work. And, I think it's interesting because I think that a lot of times we don't go back to events in our childhood. Maybe, you know, for some people it's sad or traumatic or difficult and we tend to not want to go there if that's been the experience. Or even for people that feel like they've had a really great childhood, we don't put two and two together with the imprints and how they're affecting current day. And so when we talk about, you know, I know for a lot of people, they feel like they want to be more empowered and they want to, you know, be able to have confidence and to do more in their life. What do you find do people need to understand about what they've gone through in their childhood and how that's relating to today?
Yeah, so this is, I'll give you an example so we can jump straight in. And this is an example of kind of a recent client of mine, for example. And one of the things that obviously that is a disempowering experience in adulthood is stressors and things that we say, oh, we had a really stressful experience and that may have impacted us in the sense that we might have had a decline in health or mood, or kind of we were just really knocked out by events that happened and it really negatively affected us. And it's just normal. We all have, you know, inevitable adult stressors. But whenever you look at the science behind the impact of stress, it's not about the event itself. It's about our perception of the event. So you could have two people and exactly the same things are happening to them. One person is totally wiped out by that, feels terrible, maybe have a health decline. Another person, you know, will be impacted by it, but will have more resilience, will bounce back, have a more optimistic view, and be able to move through that event more easily. And what people aren't putting together is, in the stress sort of research, people tend to, they've kind of got the message that, okay, it's about perception. It's not actually the event itself. But what creates our perceptions? And what most people don't realize is it does actually come from early imprinting in childhood. So one of the techniques that I use is I do this thing called matrix re-imprinting and something called EFT, emotional freedom technique. And one of the things that I'll need to do with the client, and I'll give you an exact example. So there's a particular client where she had had a very stressful experience and she'd had chronic back pain ever since this event. And her back pain was so bad, she couldn't sort of even sit up at a computer anymore. It was that bad. And it had a huge impact on her life. It had gone on for years since that event. So the event that happened was she was working in a company and the company came along and just suddenly gave her too many things to do. It added additional jobs for her to do. And she just got totally overwhelmed by it and ended up being sick and was signed off. So basically I asked her about that event at the time. And what you want to do is connect into the emotion of what happened. And I said to her, like, well, how did you feel when that was all happening? And she said she felt disempowered, totally overwhelmed, really angry, even hatred towards, you know, the company that did that, and helpless. So I then asked her, okay, when did you first feel those feelings? And she said, and she thought back, and I said, take it back to early childhood. And she actually gave the example where she said, the first time I felt that I can remember is when my father was forcing me to read the Bible, and I hated doing it. I felt imprisoned and I pretended that I couldn't see. So this is an example where early childhood training and trains us into how we're going to respond to adult events. So if you think about what happened in this person's adulthood, she could have just turned around to the company and said, no. She could have just said, you know, take your jobs and kind of throw them off the cliff. You know, I'm not taking them. You can stick your job, basically. But she didn't, because she was responding to the IT company as the authority figure. And authority figures in our childhood are, you know, it's mum, dad, teacher, minister, usually some combination of that, and caregiver, the authoritative kind of influences on our life. So, you know, she was responding from a helpless place. She didn't realize that she could have said no. But because of early childhood, an excessively authoritative parent who makes the child feel helpless, feels that they can't be empowered to say no and stand up for themselves in adulthood, we sort of have these ceilings that we think sort of exist on us. They're usually unconscious imprints. And then what we tend to do is sort of track the events back in adulthood. Now that might be like this particular client, where she re-experienced feeling helpless and imprisoned by an authority figure. As a child, you can't answer back. You can't do anything. You know, your survival is dependent on the parent. So that imprint stayed with her. And she said, even now, she still feels imprisoned by her job. And we had to bring up that, okay, you don't need a new job. You need to let go of this sense of the imprinting of the imprisonment and realize actually that you're powerful and that you can have what you want in your life. And once we clear that, then she can feel grateful for her job and actually move on to something that she actually wanted to enjoy more. I call it kind of chasing the energy, when you feel into the feeling of a stressful event and then ask yourself, when was the first time you had that? But it's not just, that was one example. It can be, you know, if we just didn't get enough love and attention in childhood, we can then attract similar, you know, adult experiences. And that might be, you know, if a caregiver, mum or dad, was narcissistic, we can attract romantic narcissistic parents, partners in adulthood as well. If that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And what's interesting, as you're saying this, I'm thinking about what I see time and time again in clients is what we haven't healed when we go back to those belief systems or those things that we've registered. So let's say somebody feels like nobody listens to them, right? And they will continually attract people that have them feel like nobody listens to them, right? And it feels like the whole world just doesn't listen until you're able to go back and really heal what's going on with that. It's like you see it everywhere. And I always say, and I don't know the science behind this, but I always say that that which is not healed is always presenting itself to be healed, right? It's like the cut that never heals on our finger, you know? It's like always trying to heal. But if we keep ignoring it or not addressing it or we don't have somebody like yourself where you can go back, right, and do this incredible work, then you see it everywhere in your environment, right? Like what we are, we see in our environment.
Yes, this is it. And it's just these early childhood years is when so much of our perception of the world, who we are in the world, and we set up these global belief systems during childhood that we still are living off in adulthood, even though we're not realizing they're not actually, we're kind of bouncing off past events rather than reacting to the present moment with the adult resources that we have. It may sound strange, but it's really so much of our current perception of stress is set up by how resilient we feel in childhood. And this is, the science is also there as well. So we have something called mirror neurons. So the brain actually, you know, a child's brain doesn't develop in a vacuum. It develops in response to input and the exchange between the key caregivers. So what the science is showing is that there are these mirror neurons. So for example, if mum is not very empathic and she's withholding and she's caught up in her own world and she's not in a very loving space with her little baby, especially up to age four while it's the precognitive years, the baby's sort of neurons, the cells in the baby's brain actually mirror mum. So if she's not actually sending out emotional love and sort of that level of connection, you won't get empathy in that young child. She won't, or he won't, mirror the neurons going on in mum. So it's amazing to consider our brains are actually, they don't grow in a vacuum. They grow and develop in response to input. So once you get a stimulus, you build neural pathways in response to that stimulus. So if you keep getting stimulus of love, 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 safety, 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 you get a neural pathway saying, I'm safe in the world and I'm loved and I'm lovable. If you get a constant message of somebody who's not sort of loving, you get neglect, you get being invisible, which is so common. It's that we could even talk about the prevalence of that based on the science data as well. 50% of all adults actually don't properly attach with mum, with the key caregiver from childhood, based on 6,000 studies of mother-baby interactions. That's published data, for example. So if you're not getting those positive messages, the brain responds to that with neural pathways that are saying, the world's not safe, I'm not safe. And if because there's no identity difference in a very young age, so the baby's finding it difficult to differentiate between self and other, it then also comes up with this definition of, okay, an environmental failure, like mum not being very loving, is taken internally as an identity issue. So then it becomes, I am unsafe, I am unlovable, there's something wrong with me. And this is like the core shame issues, what we could call self-love deficit disorder, that kind of core belief systems are very unconscious, but are actually driving behavior. And that's what leads on to adult behaviors, where it's things like, you know, it's addictions to things like, I just don't seem to be able to follow, you know, certain dietary things that I want to do, or lifestyle things around health, or I seem to constantly give myself away, or I'm chronically overworking at work, I seem to be a workaholic, or it could be, you know, over food or addiction abuse. So they've actually correlated huge data between early life stress and addictions in adulthood. So if you have adversity in childhood, you're 7 times more likely to be a binge drinker, 11 times more likely to use injection drugs, over 3 times as likely to engage in risky sexual behavior, all these kinds of things. So And you have a massive increased risk of all chronic complex illnesses if you have this early life trauma. So your neural pathways are basically just set into a stress response. So, but it's all about this perception. And it's where I'm if somebody comes to me and they've got stress and they're tired and they're burnt out, I'm not just looking at digestion. That's part of the picture. You know, I'm not just going to look at like the adrenal profile and so on. I need to address their perceptions of the world. And that often involves going back to their childhood, you know, unconscious programming.
Yeah, 100%. And so why do you, just curious, I mean, it's really alarming to hear the statistic about how many children don't feel attachment with their parent, with their mother, right?
Yeah.
The person that birthed them. Why do you think that is? Do you think that's a higher number today than it, let's say, 30 years ago?
Really, that's a super interesting question. I actually think it's been like that for many years because, you know, actually it's very interesting. There's a brilliant psychotherapist called Ross Rosenberg, who's basically the world leading expert on kind of narcissistic abuse and attracting narcissists. And he just brought out his latest book, and he said he expanded the first chapter talking about where he tracked his own sort of a narcissistic parent. He kept on having narcissistic relations in adulthood, and he went back 500 years in his family lineage and found that the imprinted pattern of attracting a narcissistic partner went back all the way because, you know, his dad had a problem with it, his dad's mother had that problem, you know, then she had that problem. So, you know, it's really a bit of a statement of emotional intelligence in humanity right now, which is just generally A, not that high. You know, there's a lack of self-love on this planet, there's a lack of love on this planet, and it has been going on for centuries. And if anything, I'm hoping it's actually getting better. But the data does show that, you know, it is around 50% of incorrect attachment. And if you think about it, Shana, I guess it kind of does explain why we live in the insane world that we live. If we just have to look around, right?
Right.
I mean, right, that because, explains a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when you and I have a similar perspective, and when you see, you know, the importance, we did an episode on birth trauma, and we talked a lot around just the birth experience and the imprints that are left from that, you know, let alone those first years in childhood. And, you know, I think what you're speaking to is that, you know, those things travel through our DNA, ways of being comes through our DNA. We're kind of born into certain ways of being sometimes. And that's where, you know, certainly awareness and consciousness comes into place and doing the work that you're sharing about, because otherwise we're just living out of all of these things unknowingly and not really having choice in the matter. We don't even know there's choice in the matter. What we can't see, we can't do anything about. And that's what's so beautiful about bringing the work that you do up to awareness, because like you said, you know, you can address physical ailments all day long, which is definitely an important piece of the puzzle. But if you're not looking at people's perceptions and the way that they're viewing the world, I mean, that's, I don't know how you holistically heal without looking at that.
It's totally it. And I think a key takeaway for people is to consider, you know, when you do correct like an imprint, you're correcting it for your entire ancestral lineage. And it's been passed down and down and down. So when you do that work, kind of honor that within you, that you're actually going to put an end to this. I think from an energetic kind of spiritual perspective that when you heal that, I believe you're actually healing that for your bloodline as well, your historical bloodline. And I think that can impact other people in your family. I've seen that happen energetically, but you also stop passing it on to your children. So, you know, it's this idea of not just considering ourselves as this isolated thing. Like so much of who we are does come from our lineage, what we've inherited. We don't just inherit genes, we inherit memories. We inherit kind of traumas that get passed down. And that is totally being backed up and proven in the science as well. So a traumatic event changes the epigenetic expression of the DNA, and that is getting passed down to the progeny. And the progeny, there's data showing that can pass down to 7 to 12 generations. So it's fascinating. And therefore, other factors also come into this. And I end up talking about this a lot as well. But it's also considering culture. So, you know, it's belief systems and cultural beliefs that we've unquestioningly accepted because it's just what we thought is the way the world is. And actually, we're going to, if you end up healing some of this trauma, you're going to end up being a bit of a cultural disruptor. So, you know, for example, if you want to go through and heal narcissistic abuse, you kind of do need to face the fact that a parent or caregiver did that. And you need to be able to, not necessarily to the parent, but you need to be able to express anger about that and then put some clear boundaries in place. And that can even mean that you would cut off for a parent who is still being very, very destructive. That's not in all cases. Sometimes you can find a way to still have a relationship with that person. Usually narcissists, like pathological narcissists, for example, it's just one example, they don't go to therapy and they it's never about them and they're kind of unreachable. So you just have to learn to accept that. But, you know, we hit the cultural aspects of, you know, mother, father, duty to our parents, we should honor them no matter what, we should be forgiving no matter what. And it's kind of a bit of a cultural disruption to actually fight back and say, actually, no. And it's so interesting because you just think about right now what's going on with, you know, major events happening in the media, where it's kind of, well, a lot of women standing up right now saying, no, it's not acceptable to kind of keep it all under wraps that certain male sexual abuse is happening in workplaces and so on. And it has been a kind of cultural suppression of that. But look at how disruptive it is when, you know, in a good way, we want to be disruptive, but it is incredibly disruptive. It takes a big shift. It takes a huge amount of courage to stand up and say, you know, this is culturally, it's been going on longer than it should do, but we need to stand up and actually raise the red flag here and say this isn't acceptable anymore. And there's definitely a cultural shift and an awakening happening right now across kind of all minorities. It can be female suppression, but any minority group, whatever the ism is, you know, sexism, whatever it is, there's a kind of an awakening to that at the moment. And you need to be disruptive around it, but it creates a lot of personal disruption as well when you're addressing some of these issues. And we talked about that. That links to your work, Sean, I think, in kind of the mind the gap piece.
Yes.
Talk about.
Yeah. And it's, you know, I mean, all of it. And the interesting thing is that there's a lot of imprints. And when we were talking about narcissistic, you know, and family members and things like that, it's very, very disruptive to actually address that within a family system, right? To actually speak to an abuser and confront an abuser within a family system. It puts everybody, right, in a place of feeling very uneasy, if not upset, angry, you know, sad, all of these things. And so many times the victim is shamed, you know, or silenced, or it is disruptive. That's a great word for it. And we have this belief system around family where it kind of says family is superior. And even though things may be going on in the family, you shouldn't speak against the family. Right. And I think this goes back in our DNA because literally, you know, we were protected by the people that we lived, you know, with, and we were fed by the people we lived with. And back to, again, when we're born and we are helpless and we need people to take care of us. But it's very difficult for people to confront that. And you're right, 100%, it takes so much courage. And I think that we are living in this time that people are finally saying, it's not okay. I'm not going to stay silent within my own family. I'm not going to stay silent in society. You know, these things like the whole Me Too movement, you know, that's really every woman. Every woman 10 times over has had an experience like that and felt like, you know, it's not really grounds to say anything, or they can't say anything, or maybe it wasn't as big of a deal as somebody else's, right? Therefore, we discount our experience. And it's not okay anymore. And it only changes because we're willing to be disruptive and because we're willing to have the courage to say something.
That's so true. And that's it, really, because, you know, the future is the past healed. And it is usually that links to kind of how much our childhood experience impacts us. But, you know, most of the abuse that happens, it probably does come from the family. It's usually from family. believe it or not, is this early abuse. Unfortunately, it's where, you know, if you look at the statistics, there's a huge amount of people who report emotional trauma in childhood. So there was a massive survey of 17,500 people started in the 1990s by the CDC and Kaiser Permanente. So it was really world-class mainstream research. 67% of all adults said they'd had emotional trauma in childhood. And that was an underestimate because they missed out intergenerationally inherited trauma. They missed out things like bullying. And it was a very superficial questionnaire as well. They didn't even sort of dig into the level of emotional neglect, which is very difficult to self-report. So the prevalence is huge. So, you know, it's that kind of entrenched in our society. And there needs to be this kind of so much more support around A, that it's happening. B, it's not always just the overt, like, you know, sexual abuse is, you know, is very overt. There's a lot more covert stuff as well, like like emotional neglect. But of all those surveyed, most of that trauma, you know, it isn't really coming from strangers. It's not coming from trauma from like natural disasters. Most of it, according to Bessel van der Kolk, who's the world leading expert in trauma, he's the head of psychiatry at the Boston Medical School, it's attachment trauma and developmental trauma. And that is all to do with how you're attaching to key caregivers. So most trauma isn't actually coming from discrete events like being physically hit or, for example, a rape. And even that stuff is incredibly traumatic. It links to like the PTSD type trauma. That's even that is only just really coming out to the surface. You see that in the media now. But, you know, it's this behind that is a vast amount of this attachment, or what they're calling developmental trauma. And that is not one single event. It's basically ambient type of trauma where it's relational. It's a kind of it's somebody called it death by a thousand cuts. You know, it's the lack of love, like on a consistent basis. It's a continual parent not being available, a continual sort of parent being overly verbally abusive, for example, as well. And these are more subtle patterns, but, you know, they're no less disruptive sometimes in a family environment. But especially I've mentioned narcissistic abuse. You know, there's a lot of help out there for alcoholics, you know, adult children of alcoholics and so on. It's like 12-step programs and so on. You know, if you've been a victim of sexual abuse, rape, physical abuse. But narcissism is another type of abuse, and it's very prevalent. And it's kind of nothing that happens physically, that it's actually somebody who can, you could almost call it a form of soul murder. And this was John Bradshaw's word for it. Like, soul murder is just a withholding of love. You do that to a child, a withholding of love, and that will manifest not just physically by, actually you can physically touch a child, but if you don't give emotional love, that is a deprivation. And as I mentioned, it's killing the inner child. It's a form of soul murder. And it's very interesting that there's a few people who are kind of experts in what we call this complex PTSD, which actually talk about this type of soul murder is in some ways worse than being physically hit, or even things like, you know, physical rape and things like this, because that's a physical thing you can work on, you can talk to people about, but it's so much more difficult to just talk about the emotional aspects and how that can be just as disruptive, just as incredibly damaging as well. So that's my main thing that I'm doing now, is trying to get more into talking about emotional abuse, which is actually no worse. Sometimes it's harder because it's more of a mind screw because you understand, like, it's not a
100%. And the thing is that it does cause literally the PTSD triangle in the brain. And the worst part about it too, is that the narcissist personality is typically wants everyone to think they're perfect and looking good. And so it's all very behind closed doors. It's all very covert, right? And it's these subtle things that nobody almost picks up on, right? Except for the child that is feeling this lack of care. And I've also seen in certain clients where there was a showing of care when someone else was present, right? Like, I'm going to show up like I'm a great parent and I'm going to act like I care, but there's no care when it's not on stage for somebody else. And how confusing is that?
Wow. Yeah, that is really bad. It's a classic example. You know, I spend a lot of time often speaking with clients, and actually a lot of people, especially with that kind of behavior, don't realize there's been abuse that's taken place, and they just know that they feel bad, there's right. been something wrong, and you have like they kind of need the help to sort of start to realize like, oh, they didn't get the love that they should have got, they didn't get the attention, you know, just asking a child, looking back and asking yourself, how often were you asked how you felt on a daily basis by caregivers? Who did you feel safe to talk to? Like, you'll be amazed at the number of people who actually suddenly realize, oh, I don't remember that. I don't remember regular hugs. I you know, so many people never got hugged hardly ever in childhood. So that takes time to dig into, but so your listeners have got a resource here, but there's a brilliant book called Running on Empty by Dr. John East Webb about, she's really an expert on emotional neglect, and you can go and check her website out. It's just helpful. Like if we might be talking about stuff and people are like, how do I find out more? And if I've been affected by that, that's a good book in a website. You can go and I think actually read on there, what are the symptoms of emotional neglect, for example. I mentioned Ross Rosenberg. He has a brilliant book called The Human Magnet Syndrome. That's about what we've just talked about, like the narcissistic abuse issue, that his YouTube channel, I think, has about 7 billion views at the moment. That is, it's testament to how much there is such a need to talk about this, and it's not really getting talked about in psychiatric circles yet. And yet there are people who are waking up to the fact that something really bad happened. And it's really important. We talked about the disruption that happens when you start to resolve emotional trauma in yourself. You become a higher, happier, higher vibrational person. You have more access to joy. It can be amazingly disruptive to everybody around you within your family, and you need to be prepared for it, especially if there is actually a pathological narcissist that's involved somewhere there, because you will trigger within them something called the narcissistic injury. And that's, you need to actually have a plan in place for that. Like Ross really talks about, you know, addressing that and being aware, like he sort of he gives a big warning about it. If you're about to leave somebody who's a pathological narcissist, or you're going to like, confront them, you need to understand there's a track record now about this understanding within certain clinical circles about what that can create. So yeah, it's really this kind of mind the gap and understand that when you're doing this emotional clearing work, there's so much reward to it, but you know, it can disrupt families, it can split up families, you can end up sort of, you know, causing polarity between your siblings, and you know, they're not happy with you if you had a problem with a parent, and then your siblings don't want to talk to you, it can affect your children. So yeah, it's but it's so worth it, and we need to do it. We need to set this higher standard and break through the beliefs that we have about what we think we should be, to people please everybody else, a duty towards family and all this. We need to set that higher standard, and if we get sort of knocked off from it, just think about what standard you're setting for your children. So do you really want them to experience the same suppression, the same neglect, or whatever it is that you've experienced? Like, you know, would you want to set that for your kids, or do you want them to also be able to have that freedom of choice to, you know, be able to say no to a parent and say, you know, even limit your time with the parent who can't respond to that, for example? I kind of use parents a lot because it's a taboo area to talk yeah. about, so get it out there in the open.
It is. Yeah, it is. And for anybody that might be listening that is, you know, kind of, I love the resource that you gave in the book, and I will want you to share where people can reach out to you, because I know you have a lot of experience in this space. And this is where courage comes in and healing comes in, and realize that if there's a narcissist there, they don't want you to heal, right? They don't want anything to change or be different. And this is where there has to be a moment where we can kind of retreat from that dynamic and look within and learn about this. And again, it's so subtle that oftentimes we don't realize what's going on. But for a lot of people that are in that experience, they feel like they don't have their own life. They're not able to live their sole purpose. They're not able to be who they came here to be, because like you said, it's going to cause a massive injury and a blowing apart of their family system or a relationship they're in. And they feel like that's so scary that they'll just stay put, sacrificing who they are as a human being, which at the end of the day, we can't do. That's not what we're meant to do. That's not what we're here to do. We're here to learn and grow and expand. We all have a purpose. And so, you know, I say to people, like, a little bit of us dies inside when we're not in, on the path of growing, you know, learning and seeing what's out there and discovering more of who we are. When we feel stuck or we feel stifled by anybody in any situation, just parts of us kind of wither. And I'm a huge proponent of people looking within and people doing that inner work. And so I think what we're talking about today is so important. And why don't you share, Nikki, where people can find out more about you?
Yeah, sure. So my website is nikigratrix.com, N-I-K-I-G-R-R-I-X.com. And people, I have a free ebook about the 7 steps to healing childhood emotional trauma, which is completely free on the homepage of that, of my website as well. People are very welcome to just take that and use that resource to, anything that is there to help people. And yeah, you know, just speak to what you just said there. Sometimes it's not even a full blown narcissist that is there. It comes, sometimes it's just somebody who's not a narcissist, but is going to have trouble accepting the new you. So, you know, there just might be a part where it brings up their insecurities when you change and you step up. And also, you know, it's not just other people that sabotage. Obviously, we do that to ourselves as well. So it's the parts of us that are within us that kind of think, oh, you know, if you do that X, Y, Z, if we resolve this issue, if we step up, be more of who we are, be more seen, stepping up to expressing our true passion, following our joy, whatever all of that is, it's not just necessarily external people. Obviously, it's that it can be the internal saboteur as well. And that you could see that like an aspect, a part, a kind of a little child self, a person, but you could also you'll need to address that as well. So it's an interesting journey, and it's it takes courage, but you know, you don't have to rush that. And it's, you can take it with, you know, gently, compassionately, sort of, and stay safe in that process. So I don't recommend sort of, you know, jumping off the cliff. I've done that a few times myself. Yeah. Not recommended. So I would do it a lot more gently now. I kind of work with people who are kind of wanting to expand their lives, and also have, my main focus actually is like abundant energy. So that's the kind of the theme on my website, where it's about people accessing supercharged energy. But I don't just look at energy from a physical, like, you know, getting it from sugars, carbs and protein. It's like you also get energy from it, positive emotional juice. And that comes from, you know, people having a certain charisma and a kind of a feeling, they are kind of uplifting types of people. And those are the energy bunnies, you know, those are the people who are really energizing the world and making a big impact. So if you would check my website.
So beautiful. So let's close out the interview with the 4 questions I ask at the end of every interview. And the first is based on the first pillar of my process called truth, because I believe that the truth heals. And so what is a powerful truth that you realized in your life that really sent you down a different path?
Oh gosh. A powerful truth. Actually, with a little bit of self-disclosure here, is I had to come to terms with the fact I'd had attachment trauma in my own life and had had narcissistic relationships. And it was a real shock to me, because I didn't perceive myself as essentially a codependent. I didn't realize that I was codependent, because I'm quite an active person, and I'm not like a passive, easygoing type of person. I had this idea that codependents were just like, they are, a lot of them are just very loving people that, you know, will just, they please everybody around them, and they're really easygoing people to be around with. And I'm not that type, but I didn't realize there's also what's called the active codependent, who fights back but still doesn't just actually accept the situation and realize you can't change the situation and actually needs to leave. So that had a huge impact on me, actually realizing that I'd had attachment trauma. And it was a kind of shock to me. And I went to some dark places, realizing that and the cost that that had in my life. But it totally changed, it deepened my perspective, self-love, self-awareness, and also what I could bring to others in the sort of my toolkit. I could see a wider picture of who people are and what they need, and I could bring more compassion, because I know I've been through that journey. I've seen, you know, kind of what it took, and it wasn't easy. And I did create a huge amount of disruption in my family, and I've been through that process, but I'm much lighter, happier, freer person for doing it. So that was the truth one.
I love it. I love it. And those are the best healers, right? You've walked the walk, and therefore you can guide other people with full compassion, understanding what the process is. It's so beautiful. And the second pillar is called release, because once we see the truth, which is often shocking to us or emotional to us, there's something that's got to be released, right? There's something, whether it's a negative pattern of thought, whether it's emotional stuff that needs to just move out of your body, whether it's, you know, a relationship that needs to end. There's something that needs to be released once we see the truth. What was that for you?
Well, I'll continue with the same theme then, because that, and it totally links. I had to release this core conditioning of belief that I had, very unconscious, that I had what you could call self-love deficit disorder. And I kept attracting these, you know, people, therefore, that weren't treating me as what I deserved, the way I deserved to be treated. So I had to let go of this core, something's wrong with me. And this, the early attachment trauma was so strong that I started to feel like it was me that wasn't, I felt my whole life like it was me that was the problem. I wasn't good enough, that at my core, I was bad or wrong, or, you know, shame, and shame begets more shame. So I had to understand, and this was, it's still, I'm still working on it, but I had to kind of release the idea that that's not me. That was a childhood environmental failure that I internalized. So when that feeling comes up and it gets triggered, someone, you know, can abandon you, somebody can treat you badly, and it can trigger shame in somebody who's had attachment trauma. And then you think, oh, that happens to me because I am this, that, and the other, put the judgment in. And every time that happens, I have to remind myself that no, that's not me. That's the traumatized part of me that was environmentally traumatized in childhood. And that doesn't belong to me. It was passed down intergenerationally. And I need to release that and understand that I deserve love, and that I am love, and I'm lovable. And that's the ongoing release, the release of these negative self judgments, negative beliefs, and sort of core emotions that actually don't belong to me.
Yeah, that's so beautiful and so powerful. And once we start releasing these things, which, like you mentioned, which I love that you mentioned, is a process, right? That continues on. Like, we never get done, right? We're always growing, and there's always new levels and layers of things that we're going to see within ourselves and our perception and stuff. But once we start releasing some of this stuff, we start to experience life in a whole new way. So there's new things that we're literally raising our frequency, and new things start to be possible in our life. So what was, when you were going through this at the beginning, when you were seeing this truth and starting to release and let go of these things, what started to be something new coming into your life that you were able to experience?
What the new that came in was a much higher level of sort of standard of relationship with including, you know, romantic partners. So, and it took a lot of work, because I had to sort of abstain from that for a while, because I kind of kept attracting trouble. So I had to sort of just not have that and abstain, because I had to work on my own self-love before. And the great news is you can do that internally. And then once I sort of realized I was ready and I'd done the work, I became more stable in my life generally. And then just out of the blue, they start showing up, and I've had some good fun since then. And it's been a positive thing. Yeah. It's not ended up with the usual, you know, if you have a pattern of betrayal and abandonment, that pattern isn't happening anymore. And even if something does end, I don't take that as a sort of a feeling of abandonment. There's it's not that energy anymore. It's just be able to look at that more logically and going, oh, the timing wasn't quite right and things like this. So yeah, being able to attract in much higher quality supportive relations and feeling safer in the world, that I could open up my heart, because it wasn't just going to get betrayed and abandoned, which was the imprinting from childhood. So yeah, it's already working.
I love it. I love it. And the fourth pillar is aligned. I love that. I hear the happiness in your voice. The fourth pillar is aligned. And that is, alignment to me is like the final 20%, right, of really solidifying and living at a new frequency. And you, like, in the experience, you start drawing these new experiences in which feel new, like you haven't, you know, done this before. You haven't been in relationship, you know, with people in that way in the past. And so it's so exciting. And then alignment is, to me, like the glue that holds. So what else helps you stay aligned to self-love, to knowing yourself at those deeper levels and continuing to, you know, have an environment that supports and loves you?
So this is, and I'd say this is the good way to end as well. It's understanding that, you know, we don't just manifest what we want from the world by doing stuff, you know, this action orientated thing. I remember seeing Tony Robbins in the early days and it's like massive action. You remember that's his, like, it was his mantra. Yeah. And it's now for me, the alignment is that good things come to me. Like, nothing's more important than feeling good. Good things come to me when I feel good. I can attract in things when I change my imprint, when I heal my imprints. That's what attracts things. And it hasn't just impacted with romantic relationships. It's how we bring in opportunities career-wise, work-wise, because it's all passion. It's actually at the core, it's the same thing. It's when you're a very passionate person, you tend to have a passionate, you know, career and relations as well. And for me, the alignment is, and this speaks to not getting sort of stuck in the burnout stress pattern. And this is where the core part of my work is going next. And I haven't talked about this much openly with anyone yet, but the next stage of my core work is being able to teach people how then to attract what they want in their life without sort of burning out. Well, because that's what everybody's doing. Everybody is running on adrenaline, is stressed, is on the edge of burnout all the time. And the most important thing we can do is stay connected to our hearts, slow down enough that we're connected and grounded. We have our feet on the floor. We're spending time in nature. We're not constantly suffering from like MOFO, fear of missing out, looking at what everybody else is doing, thinking that we should be doing that. It's so prevalent still. Like looking at and I have so many stories about that, of just seeing like kind of other people thinking like, oh my God, I should be doing that if I want this. And actually, no, it's the inner alignment. It's spending that core time alone, spending core self connecting time. And it's like everything in society is trains you not to do that. So the alignment is when you align with your own heart, passion, connection, and your needs, what you need comes to you. It comes to you. So, and that's the key thing. The alignment is you don't have to go tearing outwards and excessively externally orientated. And you'll just have amazing synchronicities. And I have so many. We could have done a whole another podcast about synchronicities. And I could give you so many examples that are mind-blowing. Yeah, mind-blowing examples. So yeah, that's to me what the alignment has been, is a massive increase in synchronistic opportunities that have financially tripled my business, have made me earn more than I've ever done with less work than I've ever done before.
I love it. And it's really funny because I think a lot about this, like the bridge between action and drawing things in. And it's in the very beginning stages of someone really, you know, lifting out of the reality that they've been living in and haven't been able to really witness and see. I think action is an important part at that point, just to start doing things that are higher vibrational things, right? And bringing those events in so we can start to even feel the difference, because we literally can't feel our reality until we start to lift off of it a little bit and be able to witness it. And then we go, oh, that's the way I've been living. And it's almost like we can be the observer of it. But as time goes on, right, it really just does become a flow state, and it really becomes alignment, and it really becomes that the visual that I always see is someone standing still and drawing in the things they want instead of running around town, right, chasing after everything, which I think is that old paradigm that was talked about for so long that has led people to such exhaustion and burnout, and you know that more than anybody.
Yeah, exactly that. So it's like there is action required, but it's strategic action. It's action based on being connected and perhaps intuitive. So it's not just a numbers game. Like if I do this many phone calls, I'll close one of them. It's the alignment is action at the right time. The timing is everything with the right alignment. And that's when you get all the rewards. So a lot less action needed, actually still needed. It's still important, but just a lot less is needed than what we're trained to think. And I think that is a shift in consciousness happening when you align with the soul. The soul is the most powerful creator. We're not creating from the level of mental thinking or physical action. When you align with soul and then you send that message out with like of a creative thing that you want to draw in, yes, some action would be required, but it's the synchronicities and the opportunities that will come will be like nothing you've known was possible, even beyond even what you could imagine. So,
100%. Thank you so much for being here. This was such a fabulous conversation. I think there is so much important knowledge in here, and I just know that people will be taking this to heart and looking around their lives and really with a different vantage point, right, from this talk. So thank you for being with us, Nikki.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me, Charlotte. It's always great to speak to a fellow sister in this journey. Yes. That you're so much about all this too, and I always really enjoy our talk. So thank you so much for having me.
Let's talk about taking some serious action. If you're new to the Take Action section, we take a new action each week to move closer to our intentions. Our Take Action item this week is to journal about the way you feel a lack of empowerment in your life or in certain situations where you wish that you had that feeling of power. So yes, if you can determine where the sensation of the loss of power comes from, it's super powerful. Is it from your past? Is it something that someone said to you? Awareness is truly the key to healing the future. So I'll be back next week with more positive vibes and powerful awakenings. Sending you so much love and wishing you a great week ahead.